Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world about to put a bunch of shit in the ground. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we have a very special guest today, Jordan.
Yes, we do. Now, we are recording this on Thursday morning, November 10th. Free agency begins later today, but before we go into full off-season mode, we would like to take a full episode to do what we have done the last two off-seasons, one of our favorite activities, the 2022 Major League Baseball time capsule. And we decided to bring along a special guest for this venture, one of our favorite people on the baseball internet, truly Mr. Foolish Baseball, a.k.a. Foolish Bailey. Bailey Freeman, welcome to Baseball Barbacast.
Hey, thank you so much. I believe this is my Baseball Barbacast debut against all odds.
Yes. Honestly, I would say the odds of you having appeared on the show last offseason, had we not been canceled, were extremely high. The amount of lockout material we probably would have done together were we podcasting in those months, it surely would have happened, but instead it has waited, and now we are going to make up for it. And you are going to be on for this whole episode with us because you are the perfect person to come up with some goofy items to put into the ground. So, Jake, why are we putting items into the ground? Wait, let's explain this episode.
I want to give Mr. Baseball an opportunity to introduce himself.
Oh, that's probably true.
Much of the baseball internet does know who he is. I'm not sure if my mom does. So, Foolish, why don't you introduce yourself to my mom who's listening?
Well, Jake's mom, I make baseball videos on YouTube and, mostly focused on sort of the fun side of analytics and numbers and stats. But that is my main occupation, is I make baseball videos on the website youtube.com.
That's a career?
That is a job. I wouldn't say career, but it's a job.
great way to put it. We can certainly relate to that feeling. But I will encourage anyone, Foolish Baseball on YouTube. Here's what I'll say. It is way more interesting than how he just made it sound. you will be way more entertained than the elevator pitch he just gave. And I cannot recommend it enough. We are huge fans of his work and of him as a friend. And so he is here to make some jokes about the 2022 baseball season, because Jake, we did not get the podcast until the final week of the regular season. And so there's a lot to cover here. This is something we have done the last two off seasons on our previous show, but we just love this bit so much. And so we decided to bring it back to review the 2022 season. So what is it? What are we doing here?
I can't wait to find out what happened. So what we're going to do is we're going to go chronologically through the 2022 season, which we did watch, even though we didn't podcast about it. Yes. And we are going to put items into the time capsule that fully encapsulate what the 2022 season was all about, the memories that stick out in our mind, so that 100 years from now, when our children, Jake the Third and Yoenis Jr., open up, they dig down deep, and the world is burning, and climate change has ruined our planet. The only thing left will be the 2022 MLB season time capsule.
Right.
And they can open it up and they can remember what was.
Right. Well, also the 2020 and 2021 ones that we did last year offseason. Those are in the same area that we've buried them. But
can you imagine here in this scenario where they're like, oh my God, our ancestors left us something. It must be so important, the knowledge of previous worlds. These are the Dead Sea Scrolls for the 2020s. Nope. Right. Just a couple podcasting idiots leaving behind random trinkets.
And the important thing to remember here is that we're trying to come up. We're not just being like, oh, one of our favorite people in the baseball world is John Shestakovsky, whose job it is at the Baseball Hall of Fame to collect special items from big events and games and be like, oh, here's, Juan Soto's bat. Oh, and here's Clayton Kershaw's glove. Like, we might have some of those items, but in general, we're trying to get wacky. These are items that we likely cannot obtain under any circumstance. We're podcasting, so we make the rules here. All right. Well, let's just get into it. Now, here's the other caveat. Let's just get this out of the way. This is not comprehensive. We have over 30 items. This is not at all. We are going to miss so many important people representing this, but that's just because this podcast can't be 5 hours long, and we wanted to come up with items that were particularly entertaining, if anything. So let's just say that now. You will hear, if you're a fan of some teams, you're like, oh, you didn't put anything. Sorry. That's fine. It's just the silly podcast time capsule. I think you're going to be okay.
Bailey, I'm going to let you know right now.
I disagree entirely. I think, you know, if it's not on the list, it just doesn't matter at all. So, you know, if you're mad that your important object didn't make it on the list, email me.
Email okay, you.
Foolishbaseball@gmail.com. Do it.
I'm going to reveal something right now. If you're a Texas Rangers fan, nothing for you. Nothing for you.
No, we did last year. We put, or in 2020, we put the blueprints of Globe Life Field because so much happened in Globe Life Field in 2020 that had nothing to do with the Rangers, but it was still, we still represented it. But no, I don't think we got a lot of Ranger stuff here. So we're going to go chronological. We're going to begin with the roughly the end of the lockout. We're not going back to December. We're going to begin in February when baseball is still locked out. Jake, what is our first item?
It's really two, Jordan. Mm-hmm. It's really three. Mm-hmm. The quintessential baseball lock and chain.
Yes. Yes. Our timelines and Twitter feeds were flooded with stock images of a baseball and a lock and a chain and a bat in some combination. Foolish, did you have a particular preferred rendition of this image that you like that sticks out in your mind?
You know, and you know, the lock and chain is classic. I also like the classic just ball and glove left behind on the mound as if the pitcher has been raptured, you know, and there's just no baseball to be had.
Yes, yes. Particularly on like a spring training mound where they were not there because there was no baseball yet. Yes, except for the minor leaguers. They didn't count. More on that later. But yes, that's a great one, right? It's just that, like, it's that the baseball players have vanished from the earth because the owners have locked them out. Yes. Great, great point.
Jordan, but number two. Yeah,
number two. This is one. Now we get to February 23rd. We get a report from Twitter.com. AP Sports. This is when the propaganda was flying from both sides. And we have this tweet from the AP. Mets Max Scherzer arrives in Porsche, joins fellow pitcher Garrett Cole and other pitchers as Union and MLB meet for third straight day to an attempt to salvage the opening day on March 31st amid lockout. Max Scherzer's Porsche, welcome to the time capsule. You are representative of the rich and greedy baseball players who kept baseball from us.
Yes.
The fans, the owners were doing everything in their power to give us the sport. But Max Scherzer, this rich guy, who does he think he is? We think we come to see him play? No, I come to see the owners put a good product on the field, no matter who's in the uniform. I don't care about them. And so his Porsche will remind me that it was the player's fault. Right, Jake?
Showing up in a Porsche? What is this, F1? If I wanted to watch rich guys drive fast cars, there's a whole Netflix documentary for that.
How do you feel about putting the Porsche in? Do you think that represents Max Scherzer's greed?
I think it does. Max Scherzer, who signed a contract that was going to pay him $40 million a year driving a $100,000 electric Porsche, that's like me driving a car that costs $5.
That's a great point, actually. Yes. You think this was actually a sign of humility? I think.
That's a great take. That's like Bailey taking the bus.
Like if I rode my bike.
right. No, it's so true. It's so true. Well, Max Scherzer's Porsche. I also suggested putting in his Doritos that he was holding as he was arguing about this in the parking lot. Lot of options for Max Scherzer, but we wanted to put him in. Okay, so we covered the player's side. Jake, now let's get to our third item.
The heroes. Capsule. Now we have to
this
cover
was
the heroes.
This is a little... A week later, March 1st, another picture served. Also, again, I believe from the AP... What item are we putting in next? Our third item from March 1st.
I'm going to see if I can get Bailey to guess. Bailey, what is the most enduring image from the lockout?
Like as far as the lockout itself or the date ended?
Like the whole parking lot of Jupiter process.
Yeah. It's still locked out. Yeah.
Something to do with Lindor, maybe?
Ooh, no. Think management. Think our fearless commissioner.
Fearless commissioner. Just like walking in and out of various doors in New York City.
Right. So we were thinking about the Jupiter parking lot. Yes. Now that was a lot more Dan Halem action, but we did get one very special glimpse of Rob Manfred on the day that opening day was canceled. We got a special image of the commissioner practicing his golf swing. And so we put in the time capsule, whatever actual golf club he was imagining swinging as he practiced his golf swing as the sport crumbled around him.
Jordan, maybe he doesn't have a real golf club in that picture because, you know, as a hero, unlike Richie Rich, Max Scherzer, Rob Manfred can't yet afford golf clubs.
Ooh, that's a great point.
And so he has to dream of one day banging it down the fairway.
Dream big. Dream big, Kamish. Maybe you'll get there someday. So that was March 1st. But let's fast forward to our fourth item. This is March 10th, my birthday, the day that the lockout ended. This is our last lockout item. Although, is it an item, Jake? Is it an item? I don't know. This is something I think we're all still figuring out. Is this really an item? But in 2022, we must include something like this. Bailey, I think you know what we're talking about, but go ahead. What are we putting in the time capsule?
I imagine it's a digital item of some sort.
Yes. Could you call it a
time? It may or may not have monetary value.
Yes.
Is it fungible? Is it fungible?
It cannot be funged.
Oh, okay. I couldn't funge this in my wildest dreams. What is it? What are we talking about for our fourth item on March 10th?
It's got to be Jeth Passan.
Jeth Passan, aka Skulltunes NFT of your choice. Whatever NFT scam hacked Jeth Passan on the day that baseball returned. Again, we still don't know how to put this in, not a physical item, but it will be represented. I don't know. Do I print out a picture of it? Again, we're still trying to figure this out, but it has to be in there. It was a key moment.
To me, it was so representative of the flimsiness of the internet. And oh, boy, we were going to learn about the flimsiness of Twitter. But it was just this idea that the reporter could click on some link, maybe, or... you know, lose his double factor authentication password and turn into a NFT marketplace with on the most important day, maybe, yes, of his entire career.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely up there. Definitely up there. So, well, I hope that Jeth learned from his mistake. that's okay, great. All right, we now move to our fifth item. Now, we have asked Bailey to bring... items of his own. He has brought 9 items to the table, and we begin with the first one, I believe, March 14th. So what is the item you have brought for the time capsule?
Yes, this was reported on March 14th, but as you all know, this was a year to forget for Fernando Tatis Jr., and the downfall really began when he showed up to spring training injured from a motorcycle accident. And this was reported by Jesse Rogers on March 14th. This is the quote: "Probably not a great thing." When Fernando Tatis was asked when his motorcycle accident happened, he responded, "Which one?"
Okay, so what item will are we just throwing in the moto? Which, I mean, it was probably has multiple motorcycles. So what item are we doing to represent this?
So the tricky thing was, you know, at first I was like, well, I got to put in his helmet. But I was like, I don't know for sure if he was wearing a helmet. I don't know for sure if he was wearing gloves. So I'm going to pick, we're going to go with a motorcycle tire because I imagine it skidded at some point when he wrecked it.
Ooh, okay, great. Now, again, which motorcycle, which time, who knows? But we will put in a tire that had to likely be included with one of these fateful rides.
As someone who has spent many a day skirting around the Dominican Republic, I don't exactly understand where Fernando Tatis Jr. was going fast enough. I guess he went up into the mountains, Jordan, and was just zooming this thing around.
I mean, yeah, he likes to go for 80 speed. I mean, he's going.
I would like to also note that for a guy who admitted to have multiple motorcycle crashes, a banged up wrist feels like a great outcome.
That's also true.
Right.
That's also true, right? If we're guaranteeing multiple motorcycle accidents, just the hurt wrist seems like best case scenario.
My envision of this is that he's just sitting on it and it's stationary and he just loses his balance and topples over.
Yeah, that's what, like, it didn't, like what happened to, so like what happened to Biden, right?
Yeah, exactly. Little bike accident.
Yeah, it's the stopping that really kills you.
Here, right, that's the most dangerous part. I just love that Bailey referred to his season as the season to forget, which is so true, except we will all remember this for not just because of the items we were putting in the time capsule. More to come later. Let's move on to our sixth item. This was April 11th, 3 days into the season, and we had the highlight of the Oakland A's season. A inside pitch from Chris Mazza lands on the backside of one Sean Murphy, who delightfully twerks it into foul territory, giving us arguably the baseball gif of the year, which I am looking at right now on Twitter. This 7-second clip of Sean Murphy's ass just launching this baseball away from him has 21.3 million views, which for Twitter is crazy and amazing and hilarious. So, Jake, what item are we going to put in to represent this incredible moment for the A's, and only incredible moment for the A's this season?
Our first edible item going into the time capsule, we're going to put in a green and yellow piece of cake.
Not only because that was the first thing we think of, but also because Tony Kemp, his A's teammate, quote tweeted this video with the caption "Murph got" and then two pieces of cake emoji. So, you know, Tony Kemp is confirming he's likely seen that cake without baseball pants on, and I'm sure he knows every bit as much as we now do that Sean Murphy just has a great ass. Very, very straightforward. So I love this moment again. The A's, I'm glad we're getting work in the A's in here. The at Oakland ass, all those jokes as well.
Jordan, do you have StatCast or Savant data on this pitch by chance? Do you know what kind of offering it was?
Oh, wow. It does look like it is spinning, some sort of off-speed pitch. I could probably get you the
okay,
data.
You don't need to do that right now. Yeah. But my point is basically like Sean Murphy takes this on the tush like a champ. He just like leans into it and shows no sign of injury. The three of us weaklings, okay, if we stood in the box, do you think we could take this pitch off of our cheek and react as nonchalantly as Sean Murphy?
Or would we
be in pain?
Not to flex my baseball savant skills, but I did just find it in 5 seconds. 74 mile an hour slider. So that actually makes me think that relatively, yes, but not as, I mean, again, like his butt is launching this thing, I think, into the third base dugout. And I certainly would not be able to do that. What about you, Bailey?
I hate to say it, the worst thing is not, you know, how I'd launch it. The worst thing is that there probably would be a groan involved if I was hit by a 74 mile per hour pitch. And that no one wants to see that. You know, no one wants to hear that. But that is probably the reaction.
Yeah, but not for Sean Murphy. Who will probably make news again at some point in the next few months when he gets traded, and we'll bring this up again. All right, let's move on to item 7, April 16th. This is a date, Jake, that we brought up at some point during this postseason. It was a very important date in the Philadelphia Phillies season. What was that date, April 16th?
It was the last time Bryce Harper ran out and played defense, which is incredible to think about, considering so many of our memories of Bryce Harper are him like running too hard into a wall or throwing a baseball really hard. He hasn't done that in months. Now, to commemorate Bryce Harper's DH season, we're going to put his glove in the time capsule because he doesn't need it.
Jake, you followed the Phillies all postseason. Did you ever see Bryce Harper wearing a glove once?
Okay.
Did you see him ever shagging and then like underhanding the ball back in? Like, did you ever see him wearing a glove?
This is a great question, Jordan. One of the things I learned about stalking the Phillies for the better part of the month was that you do not really ever see Bryce Harper at all if you are covering the Phillies.
Let alone his
I
glove.
I saw Bryce Harper pre-game. I think I saw the Phillies play, I ended up probably like 12 or 13 postseason games. And I saw him pre-game one time. Okay, once. I believe it was actually game 6 of the World Series. He came out and stretched with everyone carrying a sea green Rawlings outfield glove for some freaking reason. Didn't use it to my knowledge and then ran back in and hit inside. He never hits on the field during BP. He's very rarely out there. You just never see him.
Bailey, how do you feel about this? Look, there's so many Bryce Harper things, and we'll have some more Philly stuff later. But again, this tells a story, right? I mean, without the DH, this whole season doesn't happen. So we're going to put his glove in there.
Yeah, I mean, you got to thank the Universal DH for that, because imagine just not being able to watch Bryce Harper play baseball for the vast majority of the season. I wonder, though, he shows up, you know, in the postseason with the seafoam green glove. Like, was he practicing defense behind closed doors? Can you do that?
Yeah, not as much room, right? There's not like enough space underground to practice your deep fly balls.
Practicing first base,
right? Yeah, I don't know. That's who knows if they're going to ask him to do that next year if they want to make Reese a DH. But yes, Bryce's outfield glove, which he clearly doesn't need, and it doesn't seem like he's going to need for a good chunk of next season either. So I don't feel like we're depriving him too much. All right. Oh, our next item is also Phillies. Our eighth item. This was a couple weeks later, and let me tell you, when I was doing the research for this podcast, this was one of the first items or one of the first moments that came to mind. This is something that I'm pretty sure you've done a video on at some point, or relatively related this year. When I saw that this thing happened on April 24th, I couldn't believe it. I was like, holy shit, that was so long ago. This felt like this just happened. We are going to put in Kyle Schwarber's helmet, not just for the 50-plus homers he hit over the course of the season on the way to the World Series, but for the helmet that he spiked in anger when Angel Hernandez called him out on Sunday Night Baseball on a pitch that was essentially in the right-handed batter's box. Jake, you tweeted about this when it happened, and you called it the perfect ejection. And I think that that was a great way to put it, because it is just a hilarious moment for so many reasons. And I think that helmet spike, which is in some ways the key, assuming you're not throwing it at someone, shout out Bryce Harper.
Shout out Brett Laurie.
Shout out Brett Laurie. That's the other one. He really spiked it hard. But what happened to Brett Laurie? He spiked it and hit the umpire, and he got suspended.
And then he was gone from baseball.
And then he was gone forever. In Schwarber's case, it was just he got the distance, but he got the power. I mean, just an incredible clip. And with Angel Hernandez, I mean, that's also a good thing to remember here. But yeah, I mean, it's perfect ejection. We have to put the helmet in there.
Well, it was an other-centered ejection. And what better way for Kyle Schwarber, you know, a real team guy, to get ejected? He was yelling at Angel for Hernandez. He was yelling at Angel for the rest of us, right? For every other baseball player in the world. And if you watch it back, you see the Brewers dugout is like smiling and giggling at it, because they know.
Get him,
like, get his ass.
I also just the animated like hand gestures is really what makes this clip.
It was clear that this was a theater kid in high school, right?
That's true. He's used to being on stage. No, Schwarber was the best. I love this clip. And again, like, he was still relevant for the rest of the season. Bailey, do you have a favorite part of this ejection?
I think it's just that it wasn't about the call in a way. It was about the entire game, because that ball was max half an inch away from grazing the outside corner of the zone. Yeah. It was all about the buildup to that moment.
It's true. I forgot that there were way worse calls earlier in the game. This one was not that bad of a call, but it was, you're so right. It was the culmination, but
more
just
like
hilarious.
Devil Hernandez.
If you want to smile, go watch this clip again today. All right. Our next, now we have a run of three straight foolish baseball items. We begin on April 26th with an item that Jake and I, when you sent us over your preliminary list, we were like, wow, totally forgot that was a thing. So now tell us about April 26th. What did we learn on April 26th, and what item are we putting in this time capsule?
April 26th, the Yankee letter was revealed. Or should I, maybe the best word would be unsealed, because that was all the discourse about this for months and months was there were lawsuits and court cases, like, we will unseal the Yankee letter, like it's the Ark of the Covenant or something. The Yankee letter was indeed unsealed. It revealed that the Yankees did dabble into some, you know, decoding in the video room, particularly I think 2016, 2017 were the years, fined $100,000 for it. A little bit of a nothing burger in the end. However, the item that I'm going to put in is the letter opener that was used to unseal this Yankee letter, because that's what it's all about. It was about the buildup, the anticipation, not so much the result.
It's so true. It's so true. The level of people just losing their mind over this. And the funniest part is that it basically came out, not only was that the results were very uninteresting, it was that the Yankees basically, it was like, okay, well, why were you so worried about this? And they were just like, we thought that it would be taken the wrong way and that people would just assume that wouldn't be able to tell the difference between this and the Astros or whatever. It's like, okay, you were like sort of using the replay room, but not relaying stuff in real time. That was a big difference. But to your point, who cares? Like, no one gave a shit. It was just like, oh, okay. But unsealing the discourse made it so much more dramatic. You're so right.
I don't know if it was sealed physically.
Mm.
Okay, so who wrote the letter in the first place?
I think it was commissioner.
So the commissioner writes the letter.
To
he didn't mail it with a pigeon.
Ooh,
a seal.
That's a good question, right? Because when
it was
when,
a memo, brother.
A memo.
It was a memo. He sent it. He sent it on email in a memo, and so it was unsealing an email.
Right, you had to like put in a password to unlock, to decrypt it. But see, I still think this is a great item because every time you would see a headline about it, this is what I was picturing too. So
and, it's at someone's desk and it will be unsealed someday.
Exactly. All right, let's move on. May 15th, this is something you did just do a video about, I believe your most recent baseball bits. Let's represent the Cincinnati Reds in embarrassing fashion. What is the item we are doing for May 15th?
The item, I believe I would just describe the item as the number zero. We're going to put the number zero in there. You could get it from a scoreboard. You could get it from a scorecard, but it's the zero in the hits column for the Pittsburgh Pirates versus the Cincinnati Reds on May 15th. Hunter Green and Art Warren of the Cincinnati Reds combining for an unofficial no-hitter. An official no-hitter requires 9 innings pitched. This is 8 innings pitched between the two. 6 walks and 1 run allowed that allowed the Pirates to win this game despite being no hit. Ke'Bryan Hayes hit a ball that they tried to turn double play on, couldn't get it, run from third scored, and the Pirates won 1-0 without getting a hit.
And I think this, especially it being so early in the season, is also, if anything, a reminder of the Reds' incredible start to the year, right? 3-22, and they were finding ways to lose in really impressive ways. But hey, shout out to Jose Quintana, Chris Stratton, and David Bednar for holding it down and holding down that raucous Reds offense from scoring and allowing them to win with a no-hitter.
I love this one because it represents so many things about the season. That the Pirates were an embarrassment who couldn't hit, that the Reds were an embarrassment who couldn't hit, and that the NL Central turned out to be an absolute joke. Right, and the Cardinals, who won, what are they, I think 92 games or whatever in the end. Mm-hmm. Like, they won 92 games because they got to beat up on these two embarrassments 19 times each all year. Well, and the Cubs sucked.
It's more that they won 93, and it's like, how are you not winning 113 against these teams? Also, lowest batting average in baseball history, right? So in some ways, that's another way thing we're representing with this one. So that is a good one. Let's move now to June 6th. I'm excited to see what you do for this one because you told us the event that you're celebrating, but not the item. The Angels had another disappointing year. Didn't see that coming. And they decided on June 6th to fire their Hall of Fame manager. Is Joe Madden going to make the Hall of Fame? I don't know. Maybe. What item are we putting in the time capsule to remember the firing of Joe Madden?
So the firing was on June 6th. This is a factoid, though, that was not revealed until a little bit later. But it was revealed on, I believe, an ESPN broadcast. Phil Nevin was the manager by then. He had been appointed. That Joe Madden, on the day of his firing, had gotten a mohawk to, quote, yes, unquote, awaken the team. Now, that was his motivational tactic, a motivational mohawk.
Now, this is the guy that brought a camel to spring training, among other things. Or no, that was Davey.
That was Davey.
Who had learned it from Joe Madden, basically.
Joe Madden brought an anaconda.
He's brought some weird shit. Now, are we putting the mohawk in? Are we putting in the... Okay, go ahead. Sorry. I interrupted.
We are putting in the the hair clippers that were used to create this mohawk. I don't know if he did it by himself in a hotel mirror with tears in his eyes, or if he went to a salon and got his mohawk with dignity. But either way, I want the clippers that were used to create this mohawk that we sadly never got to see.
Mohawk with dignity is an incredible three words. I love this because, to me, Joe Madden's decision to get the mohawk was so indicative of how out of touch he was with modern baseball. That this guy, who had clearly lost his clubhouse, thought he could just rerun the same shtick he'd been using for the better part of two decades, that the game hadn't changed over time, that developing meaningful relationships with your players somehow wasn't important, and you could just change your fucking haircut and roll up to the yard and people would be like, all right, let's rattle off 10 wins. Like, to me, it is not the reason that Joe Madden now finds himself on the outside of the game tossing rocks from afar into modern baseball as he sits lonely in front of his poorly angled desk computer cam. Mm-hmm. But it is part of it. And I am very happy that you picked this,
baby. Let's also just remind everyone that why did he need to awaken the team? Well, they had lost 12 in a row. And then they fired him and they lost another two games and then won. So, tough year for the old Angels.
Awaken. Could you imagine how highly you have to think of yourself to be like, man, we've lost 10 in a row. Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player in the world. But you know what he needs? To see me with a new haircut.
That'll do it. That'll get it done. All right. Speaking of managers, this next item might be my favorite one on the list. We move to June 9th. Now, Jake, last year on the Time Capsule, after you biked to Chicago because Tony La Russa got hired and you didn't believe he would, you received a gift courtesy of the White Sox from Tony La Russa, with a baseball signed by Tony La Russa that said, I believe the inscription said, keep pedaling, Jake. To Jake, keep pedaling, well done.
The best part of which, by the way, is that Jake is in quotes.
Jake is in quotes. Jake, that is your real name. Jake, here's ready for my transition here. Jake, you are still pedaling. Tony La Russa, no longer still pedaling. Thanks in part to this moment we are about to discuss. June 9th, the White Sox and the Dodgers are facing off. And Trey Turner comes to the plate with two outs and a runner on second. Now, Bennett Souza, who you have now heard of if you hadn't 3 seconds ago, a left-handed pitcher, is pitching to Trey Turner with Max Muncy hitting 154 on deck. You, at this point, as Trey Turner comes to the plate, you might say, hey, you know, maybe we walk Turner to face Muncy with the lefty. That would have been a normal manager thing to do, right? That's fine. There's nothing interesting about that. Instead, Bennett Souza starts the plate appearance and gets Trey Turner to two strikes, at which point Trey Turner magically becomes more dangerous than he was when he first stepped into the box. And Tony La Russa, 10,000 IQ, decides, Trey Turner, take your base. We're going to go ahead and face Muncy after getting you to two strikes. Before we reveal the item,
Muncy homers.
Muncy then homers immediately. Okay, so that's amazing. Muncy's coming back to the dugout like, you walk him with two strikes, like, in your face, bitch, or something along those lines, whatever. That's just, we're seeing him lip syncing, whatever. We're reading his lips. But as Trey Turner is being walked, we hear the cries of an anguished White Sox fan behind home plate. And I cannot recommend people looking up this clip enough if they don't remember it already. From Jeff Passan, who tweeted the clip out from, I believe, NBC Sports Chicago. Where you just hear this White Sox fan screaming, Tony, what are you doing? And as he goes, as Trey Turner takes his base, he's got two strikes, Tony! What are you doing? And so I am going to put in the crowd mic, the on-field microphone that caught this White Sox fan screaming this, because it exemplifies not only the entire White Sox fan experience over the course of Tony La Russa's tenure, but also, you know, the White Sox fan anguish of the 2022 season and just everything about the TLR experience in one move, one reaction. It makes me laugh so hard. And I love it so much. And then he, by the way, then did it again later in the season. I don't think they homered again, but he was not deterred by this White Sox fan. So, Bailey, I love this so much. And it just is so funny. What do you think about this moment?
Oh, I mean, I love this one. On the day it happened, I did, of course, a little statistical research and found that Trey Turner about a 600 OPS after a 1-2 count, which, I mean, that's very impressive because that's a tough count to dig out. But still, you would not intentionally walk a hitter with a 600 OPS to face Max Muncy, who versus left-handed pitchers has a career 850 OPS.
Right. Yeah.
But you might not. You might not. But I have a buddy who would.
You're not a Hall of Famer. You don't get it. Idiot.
Let's zoom ahead, Jordan, to June 24th.
Yes, this is a good one
a highly anticipated moment before the year where the Los Angeles Dodgers zoomed on down to Atlanta, Georgia, Truist Park to face the Atlanta Braves. This is the Freddie Freeman comes home game. At this point in the year, Freddie Freeman was definitely not over his ex. And so during the press conference, he lost it. Okay. I went back and watched the press conference. He basically walks into the room, and we love emotion. We love it when men show emotion, but this was maybe a little much. He walks into the room. He puts his hands on his head. He's unable to take the podium. He leaves, quote unquote, collects himself, and then returns to the mic where he proceeds to weep his way through a, I miss you. I miss you. I can't believe I did this. What am I doing? So we are going to put in the Powerade towel that Freddie Freeman used to wipe his snot and tears away while weeping in his first games back in Atlanta.
You're a Braves fan. Bailey, how do you feel about this item representing? I think this might be our only Braves item, sadly, from this year. But they were well represented last year, so I don't feel that bad about it. Is this fair? Can you think of another thing for Freddie?
No, I was gonna do this one. I just completely forgot. I wanted whatever object to use to collect his tears. That was not normal. You walk on the field, you tip your cap, you know, you maybe one solemn tear rolls down your eyes. You remember all the good times. That was just a weepy, weepy man. I have no other way of putting it. Freddie Freeman, a weepy man with a lot of feelings. Mm-hmm. I think it was good for him though. I think it was cathartic. He looked, you know, he had an excellent season with the Dodgers this year. So if his heart was yearning to be in Atlanta, it didn't show on the field.
That's the other thing about this is it's like there's a version of this where he signed with the Angels and had an 810 OPS and was 20 games under 500 where I would be weeping too. But he he was an MVP candidate and won a billion games. Like, you'll be fine, Freddie. So in general we encouraged the emotion, but this one was certainly top notch crying on the baseball field. All right, let's move on. We have two more items before we're gonna take a quick break. This next one is also one from you, although I certainly came up with this one was top of mind for me as a Mariners fan. But we have the Mariners Angels brawl on June 26th. White item would you like to put in to recognize this moment, this key diversion in the seasons of these two teams?
It was so tough because I really wanted to put the Raisel Iglesias palette of sunflower seeds he threw.
However, that was my first thought, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, however, I'm going to go with the pizza box for the pizza that was sent to Jesse Winker. Winker was, I would describe him as the main character in this brawl that involved, you know, so many individuals, but I would say he was the main character. And as he was ejected from the game, Twitter user at Sophie Ballgame ordered him a pizza via DoorDash that somehow made it to Jesse Winker in Anaheim. Actually had a really nice result too, in that the driver received, I believe, thousands of dollars of tip from various users of baseball Twitter, including myself, I must say. So just a good sort of feel good story. I'm taking the pizza box for the pizza that Jesse Winker enjoyed while he was ejected from this game.
Totally agree. Highlight of Jesse Winker's debut season with the Mariners. It got him so much goodwill that when his offense, I know we now learned he was very injured, but as his offense evaporated over the second half, people were still like, yo, but the pizza and the fight, like Jesse Winker, like that was pretty sweet. And so he does get, you know, some amount of credit for that. But yeah, I mean, it was one of the crazier brawls we've had, you know, in some time, certainly of the season, the most active one. Jake?
The logistics of getting a pizza to Jesse Winker are fascinating to me. Like, where did the driver go?
Especially who did he talk to? That parking lot is huge. How do you, like, that you're really counting on. That's why this driver deserved the tips, because if he was able to deliver it, to dash to the door of the Mariners Visitors Clubhouse.
Do you think... Because there's no way the driver delivered the pizza to the clubhouse.
No. I think this was. I think Corey Brock wrote about how this all happened. It took multiple deliveries along the way. But I agree.
You know what
I
always say, Jordan?
Yeah.
Nothing quite like Anaheim pizza.
Yeah. No. I know. That's what they're known for. All right. We're gonna have one more item before we take a quick break, and this is another Mariners one, and this is a layup. It is Julio Rodriguez's J-Rod show chain. Now, I don't believe he wore it as much this year as he did last year when he wore it at the Futures game, and he wore it, I believe, at times during his globetrotting to win an Olympic bronze. But this year, making the team on opening day, likely winning Rookie of the Year, sorry, Adley Stephen Kwan, the J-Rod show, to give yourself this nickname when you're 18 and then live up to it and more is so incredible. and he earned it, man. He's amazing. He's one of the faces of baseball now. I love him very much. And the J-Rod show chain, and we're doing this now because, you know, July 18th, the Home Run Derby performance, when everyone was like, Oh, this is someone I need to know. Not just like, oh, that's like a rookie. He seems cool. He tweets sometimes. He's got a YouTube channel. Okay. Now it's like, oh, I got to pay attention to this guy. Okay. And so the J-Rod show has arrived in 2022, and his chain, which I'm sure he can afford to spare us.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Yeah. This is probably the second most expensive expensive item going in the time capsule so far behind the Porsche.
Yes, I think that is fair. All right. Let's take a quick break, and we will return with the second half of our 2022 Major League Baseball time capsule.
Hey, everyone. This is Lindsay Rhodes, host of the NFL Roadshow, a SiriusXM podcast, inviting you to join me three times a week for NFL analysis that goes beyond the low-hanging fruit. On Mondays, we react to the biggest stories of the NFL weekend. On Wednesdays, we pick one topic to really dig in on. And on Fridays, I'll give you all the fantasy football advice you need in just 15 minutes. We call it the Fantasy 15. Download new episodes of the NFL Roadshow right now on the SXM app, included with all of our trials and popular plans, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast as we continue to be like Lonely Island, and we are going to throw it on the ground.
In the ground.
I threw it in the ground. The time capsule rolls on. We are up to item number 16, August 1st, and it is Whit Merrifield's vaccination card. Now,
yes.
Whit Merrifield was a member of the Kansas City Royals. Right before the All-Star break, the Kansas City Royals played the Toronto Blue Jays in Toronto. Well, not the Royals. The Royals didn't play the Blue Jays. The Omaha Storm Chasers did, because I believe, what was it, 10, 14 members of
the Kansas City? It was a season high. They were the least vaccinated team in baseball, yes.
Now, part of their unvaccinationness has to do with their series, I heard this, backing up against the All-Star break. And so some guys were like, all right, whatever, I'll take a week-long All-Star break. That sounds good to me. I don't need to get a shot, which, again, yes, absurd. But the reason we're taking Merrifield is because he was one of those guys who did not travel. And then on trade deadline day, the Blue Jays, of all teams, traded for him, and he was just on the team, like, right away. They're like, he just apparently, something happened here. Jordan,
we needed to represent the fact that a good portion of major leaguers just didn't go to Toronto for the 2022 season. But the funniest, I mean, I think you, now Jake was hiding from the trades, as we know, but you can remember, Bailey, on deadline day, the reveal at literally seconds before the deadline that Whit Merrifield was traded to the Blue Jays was certainly one of the funniest moments of the trade deadline. Can you confirm?
Yes, I can absolutely confirm that, given his questionable vaccination status at the time.
Yes. So that was amazing. And then he did. And then he ended up playing and he played his first August 12th. 10 days later, he was playing in Toronto. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not in the Royals anymore. I might as well get the shot. I guess Benintendi fits in this category too. But his Vax card. There you go. And it's a real one. We don't want to put fake Vax cards in. That's not cool. All right. So Merrifield was traded on August 1st. August 2nd. Oh, I guess this was all the same day. All on the deadline. The Whit Merrifield trade was not the biggest trade at the trade deadline. It was Juan Soto. Juan Soto was traded. They did it. They really traded him to the Padres. A lot of options here, but what item would you like to put in, Bailey, to recognize this one of the biggest trades in baseball history?
I'm going to put in an item that I guess technically doesn't exist, but we can get it custom made, but that's going to be an Eric Hosmer Washington Nationals jersey.
Oh, man. Damn it. How do we not think about this? That is so good. This is why you're here, because when we first talked about this, our first pass, we were like, we want to do something that talks about Hosmer and Voit, right? Something about like Hosmer's literal no trade clause, like the language in the contract. Do we clip that out that he can't be traded under, you know, without his consent? But that is so good. The Eric Hosmer Nationals jersey. Oh, my God. That's so, so perfect. So perfect.
Bailey, could you explain why this is relevant for those who maybe are not the world's biggest Eric Hosmer fans?
Yeah, so the trade was breaking that morning. The guts of it were already kind of figured out. And it involved Eric Hosmer being traded to the Washington Nationals. And, of course, alongside many, many prospects in exchange for Josh Bell and, of course, Juan Soto. What ended up happening was it was reported a little bit after that Eric Hosmer, by the way, has a no trade clause on his deal. And he would have to have manually waived it because the Washington Nationals were on his no trade list. And so for a moment there, it seemed as if Eric Hosmer was going to just throw a wrench in what is maybe the biggest trade in MLB history, because, you know, Eric Hosmer, an underperforming first base veteran on a big contract, decided he didn't want to go to Washington Nationals and he was going to use his autonomy. It turns out it seemed like the Nationals had a deal with the Boston Red Sox sort of set up. Jake Groom was sent over and they were able to get everything involved. And I guess Luke Voit, the real loser of this trade, is he ends up going to the Nationals with Hosmer on the Red Sox. But yes, for a brief moment there, Eric Hosmer rejecting the Washington Nationals looked like it could have ended maybe the biggest trade in MLB history.
I just, the moment I think about, right, is they think they have it agreed upon. Hosmer's like, I'm not doing that. And Preller like walks into the Padres clubhouse and he's like, all right, looks around. Who's it going to be? Who do we got to send? Who we send to the Nats? It's like a nose game situation.
There's also the part of it for me where, you know, Preller has been yanking around Eric Hosmer for the better part of like 3 to 4 years. Hosmer's like the most beloved guy in this clubhouse. And every winter, every summer, it's like, oh, where's Eric Hosmer going to go? And on his way out the door, Hosmer just delivers Preller like a huge fuck you. Like, yeah, you finally traded me, sure. But I wasted 2 hours of your life having to call the Red Sox.
Where you were stressing. No, it's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. That's a great item.
I think it's a great moment of player autonomy. I have no other way of putting it. Like, they gave him the no trade clause. He's a veteran. He gets to do these things. And, you know, there should have been zero hesitation if he didn't want to go to Washington. There should have been zero thought of, oh, but what if I mess up this big trade? No, screw them. Correct move. Go where you want.
Would you opt into the 2022 Washington Nationals? I didn't think so. All right, let's stick with the Padres for our next Fernando Tatis Jr. unfortunate incident. August 12th, here we go. Oh, he's coming back. His wrist is probably almost ready.
He's in El Paso.
Yeah, he's always playing. Oh my God, I forgot about this. He's playing baseball games. He played in the minors. Oh, he's almost back. Soto and Tatis and Machado and Ha-Sung Kim. Where's he going to go? Whatever. Tatis is here. It's happening.
Bailey,
never
where
mind.
Were you?
No, where no, it's
were
not.
You? Where it was a Friday evening. Where were you when this happened?
Oh my God.
I remember exactly where I was. I was at my girlfriend's parents' house. We were house sitting. I was under their deck about to feed their cat.
So amazing. Here's the other thing about this. It was a Friday afternoon. This is all time Friday news dump. I know this, right? This is right. This was like right after I moved into our new place here in Indiana. So we're still getting, we're moving stuff. We're getting ready. And then boom, like actually I got a text before I saw the Twitter. Saw it on Twitter. And I and you, Jake, I know you were much more occupied.
I was a groomsman in a wedding that weekend, and it was a rehearsal. It was the rehearsal dinner, and someone across the table said, "Hey, man, you should check your phone." And so I excused myself from the table, thinking that like a relative had died or something, and I was right. No, Fernando Tatis Jr. obviously tests positive for close
to ball. Okay, close here we go. Ready? Okay, so yeah, now you're wondering what item we're putting in. Well, he tests positive for close to ball. Fernando Tatis Jr. puts out a statement that says, "I have been informed by Major League Baseball that a test sample I submitted returned a positive result for close to ball, a banned substance." Okay. Happens. Now is where you say, "I'm so sorry. I will be more careful. This will never happen again. This is so embarrassing." Just kidding. This is what Fernando Tatis Jr. decides to say. "It turns out that I inadvertently took a medication to treat ringworm that contained close to ball. I should have used the resources available to me in order to ensure that no banned substances were in what I took. I failed to do so." Blah, 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 blah. All right. Then dermatology Twitter rise up. Everyone's like, why, what is he taking that has close to ball? That isn't, what is going on here? This is not like I'm a dermatologist. I treat ringworm. Randy Giserly, a great baseball writer who's literally a dermatologist as his actual job. He gets on Twitter, he's like, that's not, what is going on? So I'll just let Randy explain it. Okay, dermatologist speaking here. Number one, we do not use close to ball. We frequently prescribe clobetasol. A potent topical steroid. Clobetasol, which calms down the immune system, makes ringworm much worse and is the absolute last thing we use for it. Which is to say that close to ball has nothing to do with ringworm. Clobetasol does have to do with skin irritation, but you would not use for ringworm. And so what Fernando Tatis Jr. is saying, that I use this medication that does have to do with ringworm, but also would have made it worse, that is my excuse. And so we are putting in clobetasol, the drug that he is claiming he thought he took, into the time capsule. Bailey, how do you feel about this?
Well, first of all, in the future, that might come in handy. You know, if you know, I imagine ringworm will persist through the fall of human civilization. So if anyone's able to dig up this time capsule, they may actually find that come in handy for them.
You're right. Can you imagine it's like the post-apocalyptic wasteland and you find this thing and what is the field mic, a snotty Powerade towel, you know, a letter opener. And this guy's got like a huge rash and he's like, "Oh my God.
Wow.
Oh. Clobetasol.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. Thank good. Thank God it's not close to ball, because that would have been useless." All right. Anyway, so I mean, look, there's so many different Fernando jokes we can make, but we'll move on from that saga to our 19th item, August 15th, 3 days later. Now, last year, when Ohtani did what he did, we were like, "How do you even encapsulate it?" Last year, we decided to put in Ohtani's elbow guard that protected his right elbow when he was hitting. And also was protecting the right elbow that was one of the best pitchers in baseball. So we kept it simple. We did his right elbow. However, it is impossible to totally describe the wonder of Shohei Ohtani. But there is one thing which I do also believe that you have at least tweeted about or mentioned in a video before, Bailey, is that Shohei Ohtani is also one of the fastest players in the league. And this year, among qualified base runners with a certain number of runs to first, he had the fastest home to first time of any player in the league. So while he's one of the best hitters and one of the best pitchers in the world, that's not enough. This greedy freak of talent has decided, "I will also be one of the fastest players." And so we're just going to go ahead and put his cleats in. August 15th was the date that he had a swinging bunt against the Mariners, where it just looks like he takes force. It's like Giannis coming down the court where he can like dunk in four steps. That's kind of what it's like watching Ohtani run the bases because he's so big. So it's not like a smaller guy fast where it looks like his legs are moving really quickly. It's just the strides are overwhelming. So I think we're going to represent Ohtani's sprint speed. Shouts out to Sackhouse.
I'm not sure what else you could even put in for Ohtani.
Yeah. Yeah. This is just too much. And guess what? If we do this again next year, we'll probably have to come up with something else. let's move on to number 20. This is one near and dear to your heart, Jake. August 21st, the date of one of our favorite events of the Major League calendar, the Little League Classic. We love this event so much. We haven't gotten to go the last few years. But the Baltimore Orioles, your Baltimore Orioles, took on the Boston Red Sox. And one of the most important moments of any Little League Classic is seeing the big leaguers slide down the hill in Williamsport. And so, Jake, we are going to take the piece of cardboard that your rookie superstar, Adley Rutschman, used to slide down the hill and put it into the time capsule because we love Adley and we want to represent him.
Want to represent Adley, but also it's great that Adley Rutschman, the man who the entire franchise hinges upon, and that's easy to say, but if you just look at the splits and their record before and after he came up, it's not rocket science. They put this man on a cardboard slab and they just sent him down the hill. They crossed their
fingers.
Let
it eat, big guy.
Go get it, buddy. I heard that Adley was very adamant that he wanted to do this. And at first I saw this and I was like, oh, no. But then I realized if he can't go down a hill on a piece of cardboard at age 24 without getting injured, he's going to get hurt anyway. Right? Like, that's fine. I would not send Mitch Haniger or like Franklin Gutierrez or Byron Buxton down the hill.
Exactly. Exactly. The rigors of catching on a daily basis in the majors is basically just as dangerous, if not more, than sliding down a hill one time. So, agreed.
I think you could argue he will end up being the greatest player to ever slide down the hill.
Wow. That's an interesting comparison. Because Anthony Rizzo, I believe, did it when the Cubs were there. So there have been some great players. But look, Adley is special.
One more before we toss the rock back to Mr. Freeman. And that is a very good description to use here, Jordan, toss the rock, because our next item is a Puerto Rican basketball championship trophy that was won on August 22nd. What is this, Jordan?
Yes, yes. So Yadier Molina, he was having his farewell tour this year. Now, unlike Albert Pujols, where he was extremely rejuvenated, unlike Albert Pujols, where he was, you know, one of the best hitters in baseball, Yadier Molina was very much not one of the best hitters in baseball. And of course, he was still...
It was time to go.
It was time to move on. Now, that said, he was still an important part of the Cardinals, and they would still like him to be catching, even if he's going over four every day. But in the middle of August, he, and during the All-Star break, but in the middle of August, he just decided, hey, I own this basketball team in Puerto Rico, Vaqueros de Bayamón, and my team is going for the championship. I need to go support them in the middle of the season. I'm going to go do that. I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to go skip two games and do that. And the Cardinals were like, what are we going to tell Yadier Molina? No. So he goes. They win the trophy. There's some incredible photos online of him celebrating. He just comes right on back. It's like, yep. He said it was business. I had to take care of it. He did. He went down. Thankfully, they won so we could put in the trophy and not the runner-up medal or whatever. And yeah, I mean, this is just one of the funniest stories. Jake, it seems like you completely missed the story and I had to remind you of it. This is just amazing. I love this so much. And what a legacy for Yadier Molina.
It's NBA shit to just be like, yeah, I need 2 days to do this. Bale, you remember this story. I had no recollection of this entire story at all.
Yeah, I'd forgotten some of the details. I will say, though, Jordan, you mentioned that, you know, you're glad they won. I kind of feel like the second place runner-up would have been a funnier thing to put into the time capsule, because if he took 2 days off and they didn't win the championship, that's the only thing funnier than taking 2 days off and winning the championship.
Very true. Very true.
Jordan, I'm looking at my calendar now to see how I could have missed this.
Uh-huh.
Turns out I was backpacking in Yosemite with no cell service. So that does track.
That's basically what it would take for you to miss one of the funniest stories of the year. All right, our next item, we're going to stay in the NL Central and talk about O'Neill Cruz. Now, there are a lot of dates of this season that we could have mentioned O'Neill Cruz. This was a date when O'Neill Cruz, August 24th, set the record, the exit velocity record, with a 122.4 mile an hour batted ball. Foolish, what would you like to put in to recognize our new StatCast king, O'Neill Cruz?
Yes, so I'll first start by saying that a month before that, he had recorded the fastest infield throw or infield assist at 97.8 miles per hour. So within the span of a month, he set both records. But August 26th, that's the day he broke Giancarlo Stanton's record for 122.2 up to 122.4. Huge game changer right there. I have decided to represent, you know, it's tough because I'm representing the exit velocity record, but I also want to represent in some ways the infield throw record, just to represent O'Neill Cruz doing O'Neill Cruz things. Uh-huh. I've decided to go with an O'Neill Cruz arm sleeve. I believe he's a big arm sleeve guy. I believe the arm sleeve would have helped him both propel this throw and to hit the ball. I think that's my favorite factoid from this is that before Cruz broke the exit velocity record, Stanton's 122.2 mile per hour batted ball was a double play straight into the ground. And yes. And now the record is a single because O'Neill Cruz hit the ball 122.4 miles per hour. They're playing him deep. It reached the wall in about half a second and he had to settle for a single.
Yes, that is a great one. My thought for this one, although I think the arm sleeve is great, we are big arm sleeve guys here, is with the literal StatCast Hawkeye unit at PNC Park. Now they're gonna still need that, right? I wouldn't want to take that away because I want that to keep tracking O'Neill Cruz over the course of his career. So I think this is better. This is more safe. Also, Hawkeye's like 50 cameras, and you know that's a lot to squeeze in. It's getting a little crowded here in this time capsule. So I think that's a good one. All right, we love O'Neill. Let's move on to our next one. August 31st, Jake, you were in the building when one Timothy Trumpet made his live appearance at Citi Field to introduce Edwin Diaz for a save, I believe, against the Dodgers. After waiting, right, he was there for a couple days, and they finally got that chance. He played the song, he got the save, and the Mets season was never the same again.
So we're going to put Timmy's trumpet into the time capsule, and he's got to have multiple trumpets. You can't be Timmy Trumpet if you have one trumpet.
For sure.
You got to have backup trumpets.
Right.
The best part about seeing this moment live is that it was essentially billed as Timmy Trumpet in Citi Field for one night only on August 30th. Okay. He was like in between tour dates, flying across the world, trumpeting up a storm. And they got him like for one night and they sent out like a press release and everyone was amped. The park was packed. And then I think the Dodgers one by one and Jake Reed of yes. all people got the save. And then he was on the Orioles a week later after they put him on waivers. And it was all this hilarious dunk on the Mets. Hey, we're the Dodgers. Cute trumpet. Jake Reed got a save. So everyone goes home that night disappointed. Timmy Trumpet has to be explained why he didn't play the trumpet that night. The next game, no one knows he's still there. There's a rumor floating around the press box that Mr. Trump Pitt is still in the building. And I went over to Mets PR in the eighth. I was like, is Tommy Trump Pitt still here? And they said, yes, he is. And Edwin comes on, the cocaine hurricane named Timmy Trumpet runs out onto the field, rides his trumpet like a horse, blasts a tune for a moment that children across the tri-state area will remember forever. Let me tell you, when I went to my Little League practice that week, it was the talk of the town. These 9-year-olds, all they could think about was Narcos, and I'm not talking about the Netflix show. Mr. Trumpet, get rid of that instrument, toss it into the time capsule. Probably one of the most unforgettable moments of the 2022 season, which is so funny and so sad and so Mets.
Amen. Nothing to add. Bailey, anything on Timothy?
I can't help but think of this incident and just remember the Jerry Seinfeld Instagram rant, which he said that this was the same as when the Baja Men showed up to play Who Let the Dogs Out in the 2000 World Series. Celebrating in season, bad mojo.
Mets season, was never the same. They would then blow the lead to the division. Okay, anyway, that's fine. We're not here to talk about Seinfeld. All right, our next item. This is also from you, Bailey. Quietly, this went extremely under the radar for, I want to say, 28 innings. Zach Gallen, one of our favorite pitchers, had a historic scoreless inning streak that ended on September 12th. After, what was it, 44 and a third. So what item would you like to put in to recognize South Jersey's own Zach Gallen and his amazing scoreless inning streak?
Well, as you can tell, you know, this is bad podcasting, but 2/3 of this podcast, a super majority, are wearers of spectacles.
Yes,
we are bespectacled. Yes. So, of course, Zach Gallen, a glasses guy. I want Zach Gallen's glasses that he would have used to, you know, properly locate his pitches, to possibly see the catcher's sign. I know we're in pitch com era, but still. But yes, I want Zach Gallen's glasses, a classic glasses guy. Like you said, I probably didn't hear about this streak until he had gotten to about 30 innings. So, seventh longest scoreless streak in MLB history. Pretty impressive there for Mr. Zach Gallen.
Now, Jake, just so you don't feel left out, Jake, you have podcasted with sunglasses on before for entire episodes. So it's not like we haven't seen you podcast in specs.
I am a big sunglasses inside guy just because my future is so bright.
Yeah, no, but you're right. Gallen's goggles are elite, and it deserves to be in there. All right, this next item is one I'm excited about this one. This was a truly, in terms of like what's actually going to be in the history books, how about September 14th when they unionized the minor leagues? That seems like an important thing that happened in the 2022 Major League Baseball season. Now, this is a much longer topic than we can cover in this here podcast format. But the important thing is how you do this is you send out union cards to the minor leaguers to say, hey, yes, I would like to be represented by the Major League Baseball Players Association. And so one particular union card, which I think we can safely assume was signed and returned, is the one of number one overall pick Henry Davis of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Because Henry Davis, who we are big fans of, tweeted way back in the spring training when we're still dealing with, you know, we're still dealing with lockout stuff, February 15th, he tweeted, quote tweeted a Jeff Passan tweet about how Major League Baseball is trying to basically eliminate a ton of minor league teams and jobs. Henry Davis, the number one pick who got a ton of money and is going to be an awesome big leaguer. This is not the guy who is the 50th round pick who is, you know, like this guy understands what the minor leagues means. He tweeted, "The people making these decisions regarding MLB and MILB have consistently made every effort to cut costs at the expense of the game. Hard to grow baseball when the people with the power to do so treat it solely as an investment trying to maximize short-term returns." That is awfully eloquent for a number one pick, I will say. and we appreciate the message and Henry standing up for his fellow minor leaguers. And I assume that he's quite happy to have a little bit of a bargaining representation now. This is a very, very big deal. And there's plenty more there. Look, there's so much more that's going to happen with this story in the coming years. But we had to represent it in some way.
Jordan, go ahead. That reminds me, we should make t-shirts that say unionize the minors.
Oh, my dude, those would. Oh, how have we not thought of that? All right. We'll get to that as soon as we're done recording. Right. Bailey, you want to unionize the minors.
You'd buy one, right?
Yeah, I would buy one. Can I get one that also has Ricky Henderson on it? Maybe says something like, I don't know, steal bases, not wages.
Whoa.
Yeah, we'll get... no.
This guy's got good ideas.
Bailey, that sounds stupid. All right, our next one.
Hold on, ready? Let me do this transition. Speaking of catchers that'll be Hall of Famers one day, our next item comes from Cal Raleigh. Cal Raleigh, who hit the walk-off homer to send the Mariners to the postseason. I was there. It was amazing. But no, we're not going to put his bat in there. We're going to put in his thumb protector. We talked about Adley Rutschman and all the rigors of catching. It was revealed after Cal Raleigh caught the 18-inning game in the postseason against the Astros. Oh, hey, this guy's had a broken thumb on his catching hand for the last month. And he just, you know that thing that he just has that extra protector? Yeah, that's because his thumb is broken and he's just playing baseball with a broken thumb. He's catching 100 miles an hour all the time for a month straight with a broken thumb. Catchers are crazy, but Cal Raleigh is a hero. I will never forget being there, and we have to represent the Mariners breaking the drought.
I critiqued Martin Maldonado for playing through a broken hand because Christian Vasquez, fully healthy, is a better option than broken hand Martin Maldonado. That being said, Cal Raleigh with a blindfold on and one rib remaining was the best Mariners catching option. So kudos to him for gutting it out.
All right. Our next item is also this rivals the White Sox field mic. Now, Bailey, there's a pretty big story from the season that we have not mentioned yet. The biggest story of the season.
The tallest story
that we have not mentioned yet. That guy, the guy in the Yankees, he had 62 home runs, right? You remember that?
Yeah, Stanton?
Yes.
Stanton. No. That's the other one. It was the other one.
Okay, gotcha.
As Aaron Judge was chasing history, kind of, going towards 62 home runs, it took him a while to get to that magic number, the 61, obviously, the record-ish kind of at one point, held by Roger Maris. Now, Roger Maris, unfortunately, is no longer with us, but who is with us and who was with us every goddamn step of the freaking way was Roger Maris Jr. He traveled across this great nation to see Aaron Judge track down his papa. And so we are going to put in Roger Maris Jr.'s rewards credit card of choice to commemorate Aaron Judge's chase for 62. Yes. He's Marriott points or Delta miles, whatever it is.
Whatever miles, you know, Hilton Honors, who knows what rewards he's racking up as MLB is sending him all over the place. But he was living large. Now, did he look a little exasperated at times? Yes. But hey, he's getting some free nights in 2023. So let's not feel too bad, all right? Let's not feel too bad. How do you feel about this representing one of the greatest offensive seasons in baseball history?
Yeah, I think it's pretty great. I mean, he was racking up points like Wilt Chamberlain. There's really no other way to putting it.
He was getting more screen time than Judge himself. Honestly, he got more TV time than most of the league over the last 3 weeks.
I want to know, you know, when they were in Toronto, it was Roger Maris Jr. and then Judge's mom. That was the crew that had made it over. You know, these people, they don't know each other that well, you know. Like, what's the small talk like? What's it like when you have someone's son and someone's mom and you don't really know each other, but you're witnessing, you know, Aaron Judge chase history? I just wonder what it was like.
Dude, I had that thought so many times.
Remember, Judge's dad and wife, I believe, did not go to Toronto because they didn't get the shot.
They didn't get Whit Merrifield's vax card.
I believe that is what happened.
Yeah.
If I am incorrect, I believe that is allegedly what happened. Let's move on to October 8th, the end of Albert Pujols' career. Big Al was one of the stories of the season, walloping his 700th home run, recapturing his hitting ability after a half decade of total ineptitude. It was truly magical. Inconceivable how actually good Albert Pujols was in 2022. And to commemorate Albert, his season, and his entire career, we are going to put him in the time capsule because there is no one item that could fully encapsulate the career and season that this man had. And because he is done playing, he doesn't have anything to do. So hop on in, Al.
We're saving him from the 10-year personal services contract. He does not need to do anything with the Angels. We'll just save him that trouble. Just hop on in. You can sit in the comfy Porsche. Here's some clobetazole and some towel in case you get sweaty. You'll be fine.
We just didn't have anything specific.
Bailey, is this disrespectful?
No, I think it's honestly the greatest honor you could receive. You know, you just couldn't find one object. If I had to pitch you an object, I would say maybe the Dr. Scholl's inserts he's been wearing.
It's so good. Yeah, it's so good. The plantar fasciitis he's been playing through for 10 years. Yeah. Oh my God, you're so right. The orthotics.
I think this shows respect for Pujols. I don't think it's disrespectful at all.
It's an invitation.
Yes. Come on in. All right. Our next item. You mentioned earlier Gallen and his goggles of seeing the sign. We did want to represent PitchCom in this time capsule. And so we're going to put in Chris Bassett's PitchCom. Game three of the series against the Padres, Chris Bassett was having some trouble with his PitchCom, multiple times signaling to the catcher, "Hey, I can't hear it. And this was one just funny baseball goofy moment technology, but also it was like, oh, this has worked for everybody else the whole season. Like, it's worked fine for everyone the whole year. And now, just like the Mets, it's all falling apart at the worst possible time. Now, is that the reason why Chris Bassett struggled in this game? Probably not. But I do think it is representative of more than one thing. And Chris Bassett and his seven pitches that he throws, maybe not fit for the PitchCom era. Any other favorite PitchCom moments from the season, Bailey? I mean, this one was definitely on the big stage. It was clearly a resounding success, I would say, the technology in general.
I think just the first time I saw it, like just the catcher, it's just kind of like cyberpunk looking. I don't know how else to describe it, but I'm a big PitchCom fan. I think it sped things up a little bit.
I would like to get instructions fed to me that way for life so that I have to make fewer decisions in my day to day.
Just have it in your hat? Yeah. I agree. All right. Our next item, we're rolling through the postseason now. Another one of the strangest postseason developments ever is Harrison Bader going absolutely ham. And we're going to put his mouth guard, which I believe he talked about after the postseason. Apparently, it is not about protecting his mouth. It is about him. He basically learned with his mental skills coach, hopefully not the same one that decided to show the 2004 Red Sox video for the Yankees. One of the mental skills coaches that basically when he's hitting or when guys are hitting, there's some amount of jaw clenching that happens that is not good. And wearing this mouth guard helped him relax more, literally relax his mouth more in the box as he was hitting. Now, this might be bogus, but it was working for him. And so that's why he apparently was like, yeah, this works for me. What are you going to do? I'm going to stop hitting mouth guards. I'm hitting a home run in every single postseason game after everyone didn't know if I could walk when they traded for me.
Harrison Bader hit 5 homers during the regular season. One of those was inside the park, and another one of those was off of a position player. He hit 5 home runs over the fence in the postseason. So whatever he put in his mouth worked fine, and now he's got to get a new one because it's going into the time capsule. Six more, Jordan.
I am so excited about this next one. This one fucking bangs.
This one bangs. We're going to put a wet pineapple into the time capsule. Bailey, do you know why?
Does it have something to do with Yuli Gurriel?
Ooh, that's a great guess. Who lives in a
pineapple under the sea?
Under the sea?
Oscar Gonzalez. Does this have to do with someone who thankfully hit a home run?
Yes. Oscar Gonzalez and his 3 game-winning hits, including a walk-off homer in the 15th inning. Had he not hit that, we would not be doing this podcast because we would still be watching that godforsaken game. Oscar Gonzalez. Now, we have to do an extra bonus shout-out here to his former teammate, Ernie Clement. Now, the walk-off homer was amazing, but then he had another walk-off against the Rays. Then he had a walk-off against the Yankees with 2 outs, bases loaded, bottom of the 9th. Chelsea Janes, one of the great reporters there is, she witnessed the Oscar Gonzalez walk-off for the first, or the Oscar Gonzalez walk-up, I should say, the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song, for the first time during this game. And I tweeted, like, yes, when I saw this in person earlier this year, I went to a Cleveland game. It was amazing. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be amazing in the postseason. And that happened. And Ernie Clement responded a week before his walk-off and said, the whole year, we're like, imagine bases loaded, 2 outs, bottom of the 9th in the playoffs, and SpongeBob comes on. Well, that literally happened exactly. He hit a walk-off to beat the Yankees. Shouts out to Ernie Clement. this is amazing. So a soaking wet pineapple that lives under the sea. Oscar Gonzalez. All right.
5 more.
Speaking of soaking wet, what's this next item, Jake?
So the memory of my season will be the clubhouse party for the Philadelphia Phillies when they won the NLCS. And one Mr. Matt Vierling walked up to me with a pack of soaking wet, booze-soaked cigarettes and offered me one. I declined because I am a professional. But to see him roam around that clubhouse offering cigs to all these professional athletes, I would say about half of them accepted. JT Realmuto purchased cigars that he was passing out to people. I have never seen so many cigars / cigarettes / cigarillos lit and being smoked inside in my entire life. Maybe this is what the 1970s was like. So I'm going to put Matt Vierling's pack of cigarettes into the time capsule because that to me is the 2022 Phillies. Lighten up without a care.
Oh, man, what a run. What a run. And they came up just short because of the Astros, who we're going to get to here at the end. But yeah, man, I mean, the Phillies, holy shit. What a season. You got a very, very up close look. Any other Phillies related things? This is the last Phillies thing we have on here, Bailey, that you feel like when you think, oh, we have Bryce Harper's glove. We got Schwarber's helmet on there. Anything else? Oh, you know what would have been a good one is the NOLA. Something from the NOLA parents would have been maybe an option. The NOLA split jersey. But yeah, anything else on the Phillies? I mean, they are NL champions.
Yeah, total vibes team. You know, maybe something related to Rob Thompson's appointment, but I don't know if there's a good item there.
Right, because he doesn't there's no like exuding of Jake has it. You spent a lot of time about Thompson. Yeah, go ahead.
Joe Girardi's NL Champions ring that he probably gets.
Guess right. I guess he'll get that. He got them their first 23 wins.
22.
22 wins. All right, let's move on to a real hero. We've been joking about heroes left and right. But now it's time for the only hero that anyone listening to this knows, and especially you, Bailey, you share this passion for us, and that is Perfect Pat. Pat Hoberg, the perfect frickin' game. What would we like to put in? Now, listen, the ump scorecard, I mean, that's an easy one. Are we printing it out? Are we framing it? Are we like tattooing it on something? Like, how are we going to represent the Perfect Pat game?
I just want the ump scorecard because that's what it came down to. It wasn't just the act of him calling the perfect game. He called the perfect game and wouldn't even know until the next morning when ump scorecards ran the numbers.
That's true.
And said, hey, this is the first perfect game, umpire perfect game in the umpire scorecard era.
I almost want, this is maybe giving, but again, like the ump scorecard, we're such big fans of them. And I've read it. They've read a lot of stories about how they do the thing. I believe they have like a computer dedicated just to running this every day in which these are like college students at BU. So maybe we take that computer. Now again, we need to make sure this is still going to continue because we need ump scorecards to continue to provide us these numbers. But that it really was just so perfect. But love Pat Hoberg, man. I hope we get, so now it feels like Felix, right? Do we want to see another perfect game, or is now are we rooting against them? I mean, before we're going to get RoboHumps eventually. So what do we think? Do we want to see another perfect game?
I don't, because it's like if Don Larsen threw the first ever perfect game when he did it in the World Series.
Yes.
And it's like if no one had done it for years and then he was like, I'm going to throw a perfect game and I'm going to do it on the biggest stage. And that's what Pat Hoberg did. There were, I'm counting like 16 one-miss games this year alone, including one by Pat Hoberg. So it's bound to happen again. But the fact that it happened in game two of the World Series, incredible.
Yes, totally agree. All right, we have three items left. They are all Astros related. The first one, we have to obviously have something for Yordan. And I am going to nominate for this time capsule the Astros, the Minute Maid Park visiting dugout bullpen phone. Because this was the phone that Scott Service or someone on his coaching staff called down and said, let's bring in Robbie Ray here. That'll do it. That's what we need to do here. And then later on in the World Series, in a much more reasonable but still painfully incorrect decision, apparently, Rob Thompson. Let's go to Jose Alvarado for the fourth time against Yordan Alvarez here. Let's see how this. Let's call down. Let's bring someone else in. Boom. Astros win the World Series. One of the most epic home runs ever. So when future managers visiting in Houston, if you're thinking maybe your starter, maybe stick with your starter. We'll see. So yes, bullpen phone going in.
Our next item, the World Series and ALCS MVP, one of the breakout stars of the season. Jordan, we say this every week. Congrats to us. We were right. We were on it. I'm going to pat you. I'm going to Hoberg you on the back. You can Hoberg me on the back. Jeremy Peña. We're going to put his actual heart into the capsule. Peña, who became the picture of him putting up the heart symbol, right, was very on the broadcast every 5 minutes. But yes. We don't need your symbol, buddy. We're going to put your heart in there.
Let's get the real thing. This is gruesome. This is terrible.
This guy's got a lot of heart, and we're going to take a little extra and put it in the capsule. And Jordan, our last thing, I think the final memory of this baseball season, Mr. Johnny Baker Jr., a.k.a. Dusty, winning his first World Series title. And originally, we had a couple of other things to put in here, but I think there is no better way than to put one used Dusty Baker chewing stick / toothpick into the time capsule. It will look like refuse. It will look like trash to those seeing this in the future. But there will be someone who will know, who will smell it and be like, that is a Dusty Baker.
After Albert Pujols is done eating the cake and the pineapple, he can use the toothpick. And also some practical use along with the clopidogrel and all the other weird shit we have in this time capsule. No, you're right. This is very important. And yeah, that's what I think of when I see Dusty. So even more than the gloves and more than the scorecard he filled out at the end, like the toothpick is the chewing stick, we should say. There's a difference. That is the one.
That's it. We did it. It was long as hell, but that, you know what? That was a long pod, but the season itself was even longer.
We had a whole season's worth of podcasts to make up for, so we appreciate you listening. Foolish Baseball, Bailey, you are the best. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Plug your work once again.
And any new mixtapes coming out?
We will let you go.
Yeah, check out my dat piff. You find me on YouTube as Foolish Baseball. I also have a more personal account under Foolish Bailey, which is maybe more topical, more personality driven. If you like what you see there, you can follow me on Twitter at FoolishBB. And if you really like what you see, you can check me out on Patreon, patreon.com/foolishbaseball.
Bailey, you spend enough money, give him enough money on Patreon, he will buy the blue check mark. I'm Jake Mintz. That is Jordan Schusterman. That has been Foolish Bailey. Remember, you can email us.
Yes. baseballbarbacast@gmail.com, BARBcast. Thank you to Chris Tyler for editing this monster of an episode. And we will be back next week, full offseason mode. We know that free agency starts in a few hours. Hopefully we'll have some moves to talk about next week, previewing the whole hot stove. Last thought, Jake Mintz, go.
Jordan Lyles, give the team option.
No, they declined the option. Okay, talk to you on Monday. Bye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.